Unlock the past and safeguard your memories with scanmyphotos.com. Here's our special promo code, GODIGITAL, to get a whopping up to 50% off your photo scanning order. Don't let your cherished moments fade away. Digitize them now with precision and care. Whether it's old slides, photos, or films, bring them into the digital age and relive those precious memories. This is an affiliate promotion, meaning we may earn a commission if you take advantage of this fantastic deal. Act fast, preserve your history, and save big with Go Digital at scanmyphotos.com. I'm Maureen Taylor, the photo detective. I really love family photographs, all of them, from the mystery images you find in shoeboxes and albums to the pictures you snap with your digital devices. No mystery is too small. A simple question about an image can lead to new stories of your ancestors. This means you can count on me to help you identify the people in them, offer solutions for preserving and organizing them, and yes, even guide you in the various ways to gather and share picture stories with your relatives. Welcome to The Photo Detective, where we cover historical image analysis, genealogy, and how to work with your family photo collection. There are unscrupulous folks in every field, even in historical photography. So imagine going to the effort of learning historical photographic methods and buying appropriate materials, all to dupe a buyer. It's unfortunately true. When I heard my guest at a conference, my mouth fell open in disbelief. Now, spotting the fakes requires sharp eyes and a knowledge of historic images. I've actually seen some at Brimfield, the huge antique market in Massachusetts, but not as many as my guest. In this age of electronic purchases and auctions, it really is buyer beware. If you love early images like I do, you might want to join the Daguerrean Society. It's a group of individuals passionate about daguerreotypes and 19th century photography. This year, they've gone virtual with a program of outstanding lectures by experts in the field. My guest is Mike Medhurst. He's been actively buying and selling antique photography for more than 30 years. He is currently the president of the Daguerrean Society and an avid collector. He graduated with a BS from Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois, and he was soon dealing historic photography, documents, and autographs of the 19th century. Mike later completed his MS from Southern Illinois University, and by the early 1990s, the business had become more keenly focused on 19th century photography. Mike buys and sells images at numerous national Civil War and photography shows each year, and his business entity, Medhurst & Company, has the largest inventory of daguerreotypes, ambrotypes, and tintypes in the Midwest, and is known for selling high-quality images of every variety. These can be found on his website, mikemedhurst.com. Many of the top collectors of 19th century photography count Mike as a valuable resource to supply them with outstanding material. Images acquired through him can often be seen on display at noted museums such as the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Chicago Art Institute, the Nelson Atkins, and the Library of Congress. In addition, he is a source for many of the nation's top private and public collections. Mike's appraisal services were a major part of a multi-million dollar purchase made by the National Park Service. My guest today is Mike Medhurst. He is the president of the Daguerrean Society, which he'll explain what that's all about in a few minutes. And I met you, Mike, and by the way, thank you for being on The Photo Detective.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I heard you speak at a 19th century photo conference in New York City a few years ago. And the topic of your presentation was something I hadn't even considered was a possibility, which is that individuals are making fake 19th century photographs to sell them at auction at a higher price. I was stunned and riveted by the topic.
Unfortunately, what you said is exactly true, that there are people that set out to be deceptive or fraudulent, and They've gotten quite good at it, actually.
You have some like really noteworthy examples. I mean, you had some stunners in the talk. And you're a dealer as well. I mean, you collect daguerreotypes, which are those shiny reflective images from 1839 to about 1865. And so you see a lot of images, maybe as many, maybe more than I see, actually.
I do. I'm a collector dealer. And I guess maybe the best way to explain it is the way I got into collecting photography was for years as a kid, I went to auctions with my dad and bought antiques and things like that. And I had an oil painting of a Civil War general that I really liked. And I had a picker who used to bring me interesting things, and he fell in love with this painting and he wanted to buy it from me. And I told him it wasn't for sale. And he said, well, I have some things you might like. So he went out to his car and he came back and he started piling things on my kitchen table. And when he got to about 10 times what I thought the painting was worth, I said, okay. And as it turned out, what he piled on my kitchen table that day was really a master's class in photography, both good and bad. And so I was just amazed with what was on the table. There was a tintype of Sitting Bull. There were autographs and documents. There were some daguerreotypes, which at the time I didn't know much about. So as I processed this pile of material, I learned that I had a mixed bag there. I had some really neat, good photographs, and I had some fake photographs in there as well. And so I learned the hard way. I call it learning with your hand on the burner. A horrible way to learn. really, there are better ways to learn than making mistakes like that.
There are definitely better ways to learn. I've been burned a couple of times on eBay. The image arrives and I'm like, that is not quite what this was advertised.
Absolutely. And you may wonder, well, why should we care? You know, why do we really care if people are making what looks to be 19th century photographs and they're making them today. And why should we even care about that? Well, I would submit that we should care because we are all creatures of habit. And our behavior to buy, our decision to buy or not buy photography is really a discretionary decision. Let's face it, as sad as I think it is, none of us need 19th century photographs in our house in order for life to be complete, although I might argue that. But reality is it's not a need, it's more of a want, it's something we enjoy. So if you go somewhere, let's say online, and you purchase a photograph and you spend your hard-earned money for it and it turns out to be worthless, that's really negative reinforcement, and it makes you not want to do it anymore. It makes you not want to go back and do that. And really, collecting 19th century photography should be fun and enjoyable, and I would like it to be as risk-free as possible for people. And so, unfortunately, because some of these 19th century photographs are worth a fair amount of money, there is incentive for people who know how to do it to fake them. And I see these things when I go to photo shows or to Civil War shows. I see them on people's tables regularly. It's unfortunate, and it drives people away from collecting. And we should care about that.
So let's just backtrack for a minute and talk about what a picker is, because I'm not sure. I know what a picker is, and you know what a picker is,
sure.
But I'm not sure everyone in my audience knows what a picker is. And a picker is someone who picks, goes to yard sales, auctions, antique shops, and finds things, and then tries to resell them, essentially.
Exactly. And the person that came to my house that day, I think of him as like eBay before eBay existed. He's the guy who has things that you might want to buy at a reasonable price where you can resell them and make a profit. And so many dealers have people that pick for them because they're in a different area of the country, or they get around more and they find things. And that's a picker.
That's a picker. And so if you are out and about and you see a photograph, how can you spot a fake? Because it's hard. Now, let's just, these people, if I understand you correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, are actually recreating 19th century photo methods to create a reasonable, somewhat realistic fake.
Yes, there are different levels of skill involved with this. Let's start with the simple, most common thing that one might see. It is relatively easy to take a cabinet card, a paper photograph, a CDV, a cabinet card, something of that ilk, soak off the original non-interesting photograph, make a color Xerox of someone famous, an interesting scene, whatever you might dream up, cut it to size and paste it on that card. And I see these at shows fairly regularly. And with technology getting better and better as the years go by, these at first glance can look pretty good, even though they're a very low-tech way of faking a photograph, a 19th century photograph. So, and there are people who actually know how to do these 19th century processes as well. There are modern day tintypists, modern day ambrotypists, modern day daguerreotypists. So if they set out to deceive, it can be very difficult in those situations to tell good from bad. Mm-hmm. We can talk a little bit about how one might be able to tell good from bad in these sorts of situations. The first thing you have to do is you have to educate yourself a little bit. And really that's what we're doing today, I think, is trying to give people some basics on how they can tell good from bad. Mm-hmm. So I would submit that the first thing you need to do is have the right tools in your pocket. And a 10-power loop can save you a lot of money. A simple 10-power loop, because if what you're looking at is a color Xerox, there's going to be a pattern that you can see that is not natural in a photograph. And so it looks like newsprint under magnification. So it's important to look under magnification at a paper photograph, just to make sure it's a real photograph and not a copy. Having a magnet in your pocket can be handy as well. What would you do with a magnet? Well, you can tell a tintype from an ambrotype. Obviously, a ferrotype or tintype. Tintype is a misnomer. There's no tin in a tintype.
Right.
A tintype is magnetic. An ambrotype is on glass and is obviously not magnetic. So that's handy. You can also tell a daguerreotype is not going to be magnetic because it's a copper plate that has been silver plated. Mm-hmm. So it'll instantly tell you if you've got a tintype or not. Having a nice light is handy. Whether you're carrying a separate light, maybe you're using the one on your cell phone, putting light on the subject is important. And if you're out buying at a show somewhere, often the lighting isn't the best. So lighting it up can show you all kinds of defects in the photo. It can show you dents in a daguerreotype that you might not see otherwise. So it's important to be able to do those things, to illuminate the image. Having something in your pocket that could help you look at the back of an image, a hard image, could be helpful. The two normal things that people use is either a small pocket knife or a suction cup. Some people don't like suction cups because if there's not a preserver, which is the little piece that holds the glass and the mat and the image all together, if there's no preserver on an image, a suction cup can actually separate the seal from the package and can cause damage. So you need to be very careful with that. And having the cell phone is handy as well, because you can research. You can do research right there. You can look somebody up. You can look up, if it's a famous person, you can look up online other pictures, things like that. Is this really who this is supposed to be?
Right.
So just having those things in your pocket can be a very big help right off the bat.
I have this app on my phone. It's called Glasses. Have you heard of it?
I have.
It's a built-in magnifier, so you can zoom in. So obviously, when I'm out looking to buy images, I carry a loop. I carry my phone with the Glasses app. It has a light in it. Sometimes I have a magnifier that actually has an additional light. I haven't gone as far as a magnet, because I generally don't collect the types of images that I would need a magnet for. But that's all good advice. I advise my clients not to take their cased images apart, because I had a colleague, not a photo colleague, but a family history colleague, who I asked to scan an image in her collection. It was in her family collection, and she did, and it was beautiful. And then at the same time, I said, did you take it out of the protective, you know, case? And she said, oh, I took it all apart. I removed the glass, the whole bit. She goes, but now my fingerprint's on it. I'm like, yeah. So I tell people to never take apart those cased images unless they absolutely know what they're doing. Because one slip and it's pretty much destroyed.
That's a great point, Maureen. Particularly with daguerreotypes, if you touch the surface of a daguerreotype at all, your fingerprint will permanently be on that image.
It's done.
I'm just going to take a little cloth and just wipe it a little bit. Well, all you have to do is wipe it just a little bit and it will
be gone.
Wipe it, it will be gone or permanently damaged. Same thing with an ambrotype. The image is on one side of the glass. If you don't know which side of the glass the image is on and you wipe it,
gone.
Wipe the image away.
Gone. Right. So don't clean them yourselves.
If you're not an expert, don't do it.
Right. And the thing we're talking about here is we're talking about intentional deception. We're not talking about, like the example I use with my clients is, mom and dad sit for a daguerreotype in 1845. They have 7 children. She dies 50, you know, a few years later. They all decide they want a copy. They go to the photo studio that advertises copies made, and they have copies made. That is a different instance than what we're talking about right here.
Absolutely. And I think what we're talking about is people that are intentionally being deceptive or fraudulent. And it is possible that a copy can be made of an image. Let's say a 19th century image was copied at the turn of the century, and it's
exactly
a Civil War image, but it was copied in the year 1900.
I see that all the time.
And it could deceive someone. The original intent wasn't to deceive. But once it gets out and about, if it's not properly marked or whatever, it can be deceptive. So be very careful.
And legally, are you on legal standing if you find a dealer is being fraudulent? I mean, will eBay shut them down?
No. eBay will do very, very little to help you. There's a dealer on eBay that I'm well familiar with that sells fake autographs, and they are fake as fake can be. They've been reported numerous times to eBay, and nothing happened.
Really?
It's a good point, Maureen, because eBay is the wild, wild west of photography purchasing. It doesn't mean you shouldn't buy something on eBay, but it is big time buyer beware, or any of the online venues. You know, it's hard to look. If you don't hold that image in your hand, it is very hard to know what you have. Mm. So you need to buy from people that will give you a return privilege, and you need to buy from people that you have confidence that are upstanding dealers. I had a situation just this week where one of my customers had purchased a Carte de Visite of a well-known general signed on the front. And it was 15 years ago. And he sent it to me. I did some research. Clearly was not this person's signature. It was period ink on the front of the carte de visite, but it was an identification. This particular famous person was a professor, a college professor. And so this came out of an album, undoubtedly one of the students, you know, mm-hmm. This is my professor, right? So he wrote his name on the front of the CDV, but right. It was not signed by the professor. So I recommended that I knew where it came from, the dealer that it came from. I recommended to this customer that he contact them. He contacted that dealer, and the dealer, without question, gave him all of his money back, even after 15 years.
Wow.
That is a reputable dealer. There are many, many other dealers that would have said, sorry, man, it's been too long, or something like that. But reputable dealers take care of their customers, and they don't cheat them. So
that's right. I mean, there are lots of dealers. I mean, you're a dealer collector. I know a photo, Greg French in the Boston area, very reputable
great,
dealer.
Great guy, yes.
Capital Gallery, I've worked with them.
Upstanding people.
Upstanding people, right.
Yes, and all of those people you named, none of those people are going to cheat you. Now, dealers make mistakes, right? And
right.
I think that's, in the case I just talked about, the dealer simply made a mistake. But he made it good. You know, when it was pointed out that you're wrong about this, even 15 years later, he made it good. And that's the kind of people you want to deal with. On eBay, Wild Wild West.
Oh, yeah, I've gotten burned a couple of times. Seriously burned.
You can't deal on eBay either. You certainly can, and some of the dealers that you mentioned sell on eBay.
So they do.
There are reputable dealers on eBay as well.
Yeah, there are. There's one particular one I'm thinking of in my mind that I've gotten burned with.
It's just sort of knowing who you're buying from.
So let's shift the focus to just a little bit to talk about the Daguerrean Society, which I have been a member of for, I don't know, I've lost count. It's been so long. I have an entire shelf of Daguerrean annuals or two. I love the society.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of it. But let's talk about what it is. You're the president. You're in the hot seat now. You get to talk about what the society does. And I mean, this year we didn't have the auction and we're not having the conference, and you're doing something different.
You know, sometimes necessity is the mother of invention. So it's been a challenging year with the global pandemic that's been going on. So it's allowed us to do some different things. But for those that are unfamiliar with the Daguerrean Society, the Daguerrean Society is the premier historic photographic collecting organization. And it brings together a very diverse community that is united by the common interest and passion for all types of early photography. Maureen, I can tell you that it has been so, like you, I've been a member of the Daguerrean Society for a long time. And the people that I've been able to meet through the society have been absolutely fascinating and wonderful folks whom I would probably not otherwise I've had any reason to know, but because of the Daguerrean Society and the events that we hold, I've been able to meet these wonderful people and really get to know about 19th century photography in ways that I think would have been impossible otherwise. So I would say about 90% of the Daguerrean Society members collect other types of photographs and processes beyond daguerreotypes, myself included,
mm-hmm.
and you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to just be into daguerreotypes to belong to the Daguerrean Society. Although, you know, I have a passion for daguerreotypes, and I love learning about the dawn of photography and what that looks like and what it's all about and who the makers were and how it came about and how it came to America. I love all that.
I love all that. I love it. I can't afford the daguerreotypes generally. I have a couple of very expensive ones that I won't talk about how much I paid for them. One I bought from Julian Wolf, who's no longer with us.
Sweet man.
Yeah, sweet man. I loved it immediately. Spent way too much on it. But I still love it. I still love that daguerreotype, and I use it as an example in a lot of my talks. But early photography is fascinating because it is, like you talk about eBay being the Wild West. Well, early photography is like the Wild West. You've got all these people playing around with chemicals and processes, trying to come up with something, and then they do.
One of the things that I love about daguerreotypes in particular, and for those that aren't familiar with a daguerreotype and the process, it's really the first commercial photograph process that was available, and very involved. It's a copper plate that's been silver plated and sensitized, and the process, and the plate has to be polished. The process is so involved that just the prep for the plate, to make the plate and have it ready to be able to use, it can take an hour or more. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very complicated process. It was difficult to do. And every daguerreotype is one of a kind.
Yeah.
So I love that about it. The daguerreotypes in your collection are not repeated in my collection because there's only one.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you don't have to be a wealthy person to own these miniature one-of-a-kind treasures, I really like. I like that aspect. You can buy a daguerreotype for, well, depending on the condition and content and such, I don't know, $30?
$30, exactly. Yeah. And then it can go up from there.
Yeah, it could also be, you know,
$3,000,
thousands of dollars,
yeah.
But you can get very, very beautiful daguerreotypes for $100, $200, you know, for something that's not an outrageous price. And again, it's one of a kind. It's one of the first photographs ever made, and they're absolutely stunning and beautiful. And there's a clarity that a daguerreotype has that paper photography can't repeat. There is no grain to a daguerreotype.
They are so stunning, so stunning. So, you know, I've talked to you about how I researched and wrote an article on the history of Providence, Rhode Island daguerreotype. I wrote that decades and decades ago, and then revised it, added some information to it that I didn't have, which was great. And we were talking about how you'd actually never seen a daguerreotype from Rhode Island. And I'm like, now I'm on a hunt. Now I'm going to have to look for, like, I have a list of the daguerreotypists. So we're going to look, but I have a, go ahead.
They exist, but they're not common. And, you know, I love it that you are into Providence, Rhode Island daguerreotypes. If you found one, that's a treasure for you.
Oh, yeah.
And I grew up near St. Louis. I collect St. Louis marked daguerreotypes. And so everybody has their own little niche of things that are interesting to them. And it's fun just to hear what everybody collects and why they collect it. And it's a lot of fun.
So years and years ago, when I was just a sprout, you know, right out of college, I got a job. I always loved photographs. My history with working with photographs and with just loving pictures in general dates back to sort of my mom and our family photos, which is why I'm the photo detective, because I help people put the family history and family photographs together. But I got a job working as like an assistant curator in a historical society. And pretty much the only photographs I'd ever seen were, until that point, were snapshots and a couple of large oversized group portraits, right? 1900. And then the curator pulled out all these daguerreotypes and she said, well, we've got this request to research Providence daguerreotypus. And I looked at those images on the table, and it was like it was singing. I'd never seen a daguerreotype before. It was absolutely, positively love at first sight. I was like, I want to know everything there is to know about these things. They are the coolest I've ever seen, the sharpness. Sometimes they're colored, right? They're gorgeous. I have this, I have one of a little, of a toddler sitting in a, like a chair. It's a, you know, a chair at the table kind of thing. It's like a photographer's prop. So she's sitting there and she's got this little pink dress on because it's all been colored. And her little fingers are up in the air, just kind of snapping together, like tapping her two fingers together. I thought, I have to have it. It's not Providence, but I have to have it. It's the cutest thing I've ever seen. They call to you, like you have to.
Absolutely. I had the exact same reaction that day when all those images were piled on my kitchen table, and there was a daguerreotype in there, a quarter plate daguerreotype of a couple, and it was in a thermoplastic case. I now know it was De Coverley and the Gypsies is what the case is titled. And everything about that image fascinated me. The clarity and beauty of the daguerreotype itself, this couple that was in this case, the case itself, you know, there was this beautiful velvet pad, and thermoplastic cases are molded cases. So it was molded with a scene on the front. For those that don't know, hard images, both tintypes, ambrotypes, and daguerreotypes, they came in a case. Those cases were normally made of leather or pressed paper, something like that. And in the 1850s, they started molding thermoplastic cases, which is like shellac and sawdust mixed together and molded. Yeah. And there would be scenes on these cases often. And so this one had one of those kind of cases on it. And so I had to learn about the case. I had to learn about the image. And the whole package fascinated me and started me on this path of collecting daguerreotypes.
And how many do you have now?
Several hundred. It's bad.
Yeah, right.
It's an addiction, I think.
It is an addiction.
At one point in time, I had a china cabinet, and it was going to be, I'm only going to collect until I fill this china cabinet. Well, I don't know how many china cabinets full I would have at this point in time, but it's a lot of them. Yeah. I just couldn't stop.
Exactly. Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. The whole thing is fascinating. So I was asked several months ago to talk about early photography in Providence for a documentary that's being made of the Gorham Company, which is a silversmith. And they had a photo studio in the 1860s. I started looking into this a little bit more because I'm like, okay, they're silversmiths. They make silver plates, and it must be daguerreotypes. I haven't found any proof of that. But as I started to do more research into early photography in Providence, I discovered that there were early paper photographs done here in the 1850s. Hmm. They have a particular name, which I can't find right now. But there's
like
one
of salt prints?
No, it's not. They're color. They colorize them. So I'm off rummaging around in the world now trying to find out more about these, including a colored photograph by Manchester and Chapin that is of the First Baptist Church in Providence, Rhode Island, from 1854. It won an award.
Wow.
And it is not a daguerreotype.
Interesting. Well, that's pretty cool.
I've never heard of it. I've never heard of the process before. I was like, what? And how is that even possible? Colored in oil colors.
Okay, so they tinted it somehow or painted over it?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll never even, like, I guess I'm looking for a painting. Just absolutely fascinating to me. I wish I could find that. Because I'd never heard of it before, and I was like, what the heck? Oh, here it is. A crystal type.
I have heard it. I've heard that term before. I don't know the definition.
So there's an ad for SB Brown. If you want a small amber type or photograph, go to Brown's. If you want a crystal type, go to Brown's. And so supposedly the crystal type is what Manchester and Chapin were making, and they won an award for their colored crystal type of the First Baptist Church here in Providence. This is from 1860. But
That's interesting.
It's very interesting. It was like, what? Made me sit up. And then, of course, I've got, you know, stacks. You can hear the papers that I'm rummaging around. Because I just started to do a ton of research.
Now you got me wondering what the definition is. I'll have to see if I can find that out.
Exactly. Let me know. I need to know. We can have a whole nother conversation about crystal
type. I'll ask Keith Davis. I bet Keith Davis will know.
And who is Keith Davis?
He is the director of photography at the Nelson Atkins.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever been to the Nelson? Like at any of the Daguerrean Society events there or anything?
So I was supposed to go this year. It's in Kansas City. There's a big genealogy conference in Kansas City. And it's gone virtual, of course, because nobody's traveling. So I was actually going to go a couple of days early and go to the Nelson Atkins.
Yeah. If you ever do go to Kansas City, one, you absolutely need to go to the Nelson Atkins.
Yes.
And see the photos there. I can hook you up with... probably Jane Aspinwall is probably the best person who would probably, if she's available, even give you a little behind the scenes tour of some of the photography. And she would probably be an excellent guest for you on your podcast.
All right. I will follow up with her.
She did the Gold Rush show that, that they just did.
Yes. 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 I want to talk to her.
She's learned from Keith.
Learned from Keith.
Yeah,
we all learn.
Keith built their collection, and I believe it's the best early photography collection in the country, bar none. And it's one masterpiece after another, after another, after another.
Well, here's what I explain to my clients is just what's happened here in this conversation, right? I mentioned crystal types, and you're like, oh, maybe I've heard of that. I need to learn more about it. There is so much history of early photography that is unwritten, unresearched.
It's true.
What about backdrops and props? What do we know about them? Not nearly enough. We have daguerreotype cases. We have Sean, who does those wonderful books on, I want to get him on the podcast for sure.
Yeah, he would be great.
He's obsessed with daguerreotype and ambertype cases. And because of his obsession, we now know a whole lot more about when different types of cases were popular.
It's true. Yeah, I don't know if you heard the recent Zoom lecture that Mike Robinson did on daguerre, but the research that Mike has done is second to none because he is a modern daguerreotypist. He not only can do the research and read, you know, what's out there, but then he can go try these processes and explain it in a way that you or I couldn't do because, you know, I don't, unless you have a daguerreotype studio in your home.
Like Mike does.
You can't do that level, that deep of a dive. And so he was able to read all the literature, do these experiments and show what daguerre's contribution was in a way that others who have written could not do. It's totally fascinating.
So this has been amazing to just sit and talk. So in the family history field, we go to conferences and we talk to other family historians about family history because our significant others maybe could care less. And our friends really don't want to hear us talk about what we found in the census record, but we have other colleagues, right? So this is that conversation we're having. It's like, you're talking about early photography. I love early photography and research early photography. We have found the moment where we can share this information that a whole lot of people really aren't interested in. But to us, it's fascinating.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I love about what we do, Maureen, is it really doesn't matter what social status you have. It doesn't matter if you're what your job is in this world, because what brings us together is the common love of early photography, and the rest of that all fades away. And I just really, really like that. It's a very unifying place to be, and it's fun. I like that a lot. And it seems like often in our society, it's not that way, but it is when you come together over a common love of something like early photography.
Well, if you ever find a Rhode Island daguerreotype, you know who to contact.
All right, you've got a deal.
Okay. Thank you so much for being on the Photo Detective. This has been a fascinating and fun conversation, and I hope to have you back another time. We can talk about something else related to early photos.
Sounds great, Maureen. Thanks a bunch.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media, leave me a rating and a review. And if you know of a friend or family member who's also interested in family photographs, share this episode with them too. See you next time. I'm thrilled to be offering something new. Photo Investigations. These collaborative one-on-one sessions look at your family photos. You and I meet to discuss your mystery images and find out how each clue and hint might contribute to your family history. And trust me, these images can reveal so much in your research. I have decades of experience in the photo, genealogy, and history industries. This is your chance to learn from me and discover the stories in your family images. You can find out more by going to MaureenTaylor.com and clicking on Family Photo Investigations.